going to go, then please don't say anything.
Okay. Every once in a while, you analyze a halachic topic where it seems kind of far-fetched that this would come up. It doesn't seem so halachically practical. But it's important to realize in the world of analyzing ideas, sometimes how practical a case isn't crucial because the case helps illustrate a lot of principles. And maybe some of those principles will end up having different kinds of practical ramifications. So when you see examples today, it's probably a halachic issue that, please God, no one's going to have to deal with in your lifetime. But nonetheless, I think we're going to learn some very interesting things from this case. Okay, so let's see this case in Masechet Shabbat. Okay, so first source. Amar Rav Huna, I am halach b'derech o b'midbar, ve'eini yodei matai Shabbat. Okay, so you get lost in the desert, and you lose track of time, and now you have no idea what day of the week it is. You're totally clueless about what day of the week it is. So how does Shabbat play out for such an individual? Right, you have 7 days coming up. Each of the 7 days has an equal chance of being your Shabbat. Just to point out one thing, if you guys are curious for, you know, children's literature, there's a couple in Yerushalayim whose name are Steve Klitzner and Judy Klitzner. Each one has written a book on Tanakh, but they also jointly once wrote a book about, you know, from kids who get stranded on desert islands. Because, you know, there's the old Robinson Crusoe question of how you survive on a desert island. So they were curious if you had that question, plus the need for halachic observance thrown in, like, how would it play out? Okay, so what's it called? It's called Yaldei Tarshish B'Iyei Hayam. Okay, go look it up, okay? There is a book about from kids trapped in a desert island. You really read it?
Yeah.
How'd it get to you? Whoa.
English edition.
The English edition, okay. Okay, one last question before we move on. Harry's ineligible for this. What does that mean, Yaldei Tarshish B'Iyei Hayam? What's B'Iyei Hayam? Oh, very good. Okay, I is an island, right? Perek Yudim Gilad Esther. They put a tax, Allah Aretz B'Iyei Hayam. Okay, very good. Okay, let's go. So what do you do? This is first day, Rechia Barav Amar. Sorry, Mona Shisha Yamim Mushami Omechad. You count 6 days, and then guard one day. So you seem to arbitrarily decide the seventh day from now is going to be my Shabbat. 6 days, I'll have regular chol, and then Shabbat. Great. Chia Barav Amar, Mishama Yomechad, Mona Shisha. No, the opposite. That first day is your Shabbat, and then you have 6 days of chol. What's the debate? But my kamifugi, what's the point of contention? Marasiva kabriyato sholam. Okay, what's the logic of six and then one? It's pretty obvious. You're modeling yourself after the creation story. 6 days of work and then Shabbat, great. Why would someone say one and then six? Marasiva kadamari shon. What if I don't use it from the cosmic perspective? What if I look at human perspective? If humanity is created on the sixth day before Shabbat, so humanity's calendar is actually first Shabbat and then 6 days of work. Okay, so either it's six and one like creation, or one and six from the perspective of Adam Rishon. Great. Now I skipped a piece where the Gemara proves who's right. We end up going with six and one. Okay, but now let's move on. What about, you know, you have to do malacha because you need to stay alive. You're going to have to, you know, trap animals as a malacha, killing an animal as a malacha, kindling a fire for cooking as a malacha. So how does that play out? How does the world of malacha play out? Amar Rava b'chol yom v'yom osolo k'dei parnasato. Bar mehu yuma. So what's the Gemara's first position? How much malacha do I do on any given day? Enough to survive. Why don't I do more than that? Yeah, every day might equally be Shabbat. So I don't need makal Shabbat. Obviously, Shabbat is overrided for pikuach nefesh. So I make my one meal. Look, if it's gonna, you know, if I kill one chicken, this can get me through the day. So, okay, that's what I do. Just enough to survive. But this is important to realize, guys, what's bar in Aramaic? Yeah, bar means chutz. Okay, except for that day. Okay, so it sounds like, what makes it Shabbos? Every other day I do enough malacha to survive, and the seventh day I don't do any malacha. It makes a lot of sense, right? Then we're straight. Vahu yom alimut. What's the question? That day I have to starve? Now, the Gemara seems to assume, not getting into it right now, but you're already weakened probably, so one day without food is really going to be a problem for you. So the Gemara says, no, the oven may at most stay parnasot. On whatever day that's my arbitrary Friday, I do double duty. I prepare two meals, and then I'm good to go. Then the Gemara is Akasha. V'dilmel mi etmo Shabbat havai. Why does that not work? Yeah, even though I arbitrarily picked a day of Shabbos, I really have no clue what day of Shabbos. So from an Issa Malacha perspective, it's the same. So then the claim is, I would have no right to do double duty on Friday, because it's not Pikuach Nefesh yet. So the Gemara says, Ela kol yom v'yom oselo parnasato afilu hu yuma. And now things get really intriguing. Apparently, how does it work? Every day I do the same amount. All 7 days I do just enough to survive. That is the halachic position. So that opens an obvious question. If as far as malacha is concerned, all 7 days are the same, what's the obvious question? So what makes Shabbos Shabbos? Vahu yuma b'may minkarle. How is it minkar? How is it recognizable? Okay, answer. B'kiddusha v'avdalta. So what do? I make Kiddush and Avdalta. It's very interesting. What makes it Shabbos? Not Malacha. From a Malacha perspective, all 7 days are the same. I do enough to survive. But one out of every seventh day, I make Kiddush and Avdalta. Now look at Rashi. It's an interesting Rashi we're going to come back to. Rashi says, what am I doing in this Kiddush and Avdalta business? Lezikaron ba'alma. Why am I doing this? What am I trying to remember? Yeah, the concept of Shabbos. She'e yo yishum yom chiluk mishar yamim v'lo tishtakach Shabbat menu. So something very powerful about this idea. Like, Shabbos is so central to Jewish identity. Even if from a malacha perspective, I really lose any sense of Shabbat, it can't be that a Jew goes through life with no sense of Shabbat. We'll create some artificial sense. Okay? All right, 1 out of every 7 days, you make Kiddush and Avdalah, and you realize that Shabbat is part of Jewish consciousness. Okay, we're good? Ever got the Gemara down? So from a Malacha perspective, all 7 days are the same. You do enough to survive. 1 out of every 7, you make Kiddush and Havdalah. Great? Okay, Jacob Katz. That's interesting. Okay? So we'll come back to your point a little bit later. So let's go a little out of order, guys. Let us go to the Ritva. Okay, source 5. Where's Ari Levine? I wanted to make fun of him today. Where is he? It's not fair. We can't do it. He's not here. All right, I'll do it anyway. Okay. Guys, it was very interesting being in Poland, sitting next to Ari Levine on the bus, because his constant chatter was quite kind of really fascinating. So I'm standing there one day, and he starts like fantasizing about language. What would happen if we always pronounced I as I, and not all the other pronunciations? We'd have to say things like "Tickle me Elmo." Okay. 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 Sorry, I couldn't answer the question. It was a good question. Okay, let's go. Let's go to the Ritva. Okay. So let's go to the Ritva. The Ritva has an interesting question. The Ritva has like a practical question. Okay, the Ritva wants to know, wait, you're making Kiddush and Avdalah. What are you making Kiddush and Avdalah on? Probably you're not traveling with many bottles of kosher wine. Okay, and also probably on that midbar, you're lost in, you're not going to like start cultivating grapes and producing your own wine. So what exactly are you making Kiddush? Interesting practical question. You're making Kiddush and Avdalah on what? So let's see the Ritva. The Kiddush of Avdalah, Peirish Bepat. What are you making it on? Bread. On bread. The Ilu B'yayin Leka B'midbar Min Hastam. Oh, good word to know. What's Min Hastam? Okay. Min Hastam means, guys, it's good yeshivas to know. When you say Mistama, what is the yeshivas guy saying? Mistam is what you would assume. Kastam is in general. I mean, when you have specific knowledge, you don't have to make assumptions. When you have generalities, you have to make assumptions. That's min hastam. It's like when you said to your Israeli kid, why did you bother your brother? And he says, stam. What does stam mean? I don't have a specific reason, right? It could just be generic. Okay, so that is the word stam. So min hastam, you'd imagine you don't have wine in the desert. Okay, so we know that there is a din of making Kiddush on bread. If you don't have wine, terrific. What's the problem, guys? Everyone should have a problem. If you know your Hilchot Shabbat, you're not allowed to. There's no such thing of Havdalah on bread. We'll discuss why in 1 second. We'll discuss why in 1 second, guys. Okay. In Kiddush, this is actually an interesting halacha. In Kiddush, there are 3 options. Okay, there's wine. There's what we call Chamar Medina. What's Chamar Medina? A significant beverage other than wine. And bread. Those are 3 options for Kiddush. Now, there's a lot of interesting discussions how you define Chamar Medina. What gives a beverage significance, right? Is Coca-Cola significant? Is Tropicana orange juice significant? Right, that's a very interesting question, not for us right now. And then there's the bread option. And in Kiddush, it's interesting in Shabbat, I'm not going to tell you why right now. It's interesting to question what's second place. I mean, if I don't have wine, is it preferable to use bread or to use chamar medina? There's a very interesting rush, guys. I'm not going to tell you why. If you can figure that out, tell me later. There's a rush that says Friday night, we prefer bread. So the ranking would be wine, bread, chamar medina, Friday night. Shabbos lunch, we prefer chamar medina. And then the ranking for Shabbos lunch would be wine, chamar medina, bread. If you can figure out why, tell me after this year. Okay, but in Havdalah, there are only 2 options. The only options are wine and chamar medina. Right, you could have someone make Havdalah on beer, but you can't make Havdalah on bread. By the way, why would that be true? Why is bread an option for Kiddush and not an option for Havdalah? You know why? Yeah. Why is bread a more central theme to Kiddush? Because there's a rule called En Kiddush Ela Makom Suda. So Kiddush is inherently linked with the bread. There's no rule called Ein Havdalah El Makom Suda. So the bread is kind of irrelevant to Havdalah. Therefore, bread can't be used for Havdalah, but Chamar Medina can. So this is a difficult Ritvah. He assumes you're going to have bread there in the desert, but you're not going to have wine. So you're making Kiddush and Havdalah on bread. So look what he says now. Afal pish ein mavdil an al hapat. Wait, I know the halacha of the Ritvah. You can't make Havdalah on bread. Mikom akom hani mili biyishuv. That's if you're in a settled area, you're in civilization. Aval b'midbar she'ef shabiyayin mavdil b'pat. But in the midbar where you have no option, you could use bread. What do you think, guys? Is that a good svar or not such a good svar? Why is it confusing? Okay, I'm going to argue against it, and then I want to argue for it. We'll see if you guys could defend it. Okay, here's my argument against it. Let's say it's Sukkot time, and there's no kosher etrog in your town. Okay, so what should we say? Should we say take a lemon instead? No, what happens? Okay, if you can't fulfill the mitzvah, it's not your fault, and life goes on. You can't fulfill the mitzvah. Right? It's usually not the case that if you can't do something because you lack the requisite items, you could use the wrong item. You guys agree with that? So what's going on here? If Havdalah is not meant to be said on bread, and all you have, the only option is wine, and you have no wine, okay, so you can't make Havdalah. Okay, Simon, what do you think? Okay, not bad. Anybody else have a different suggestion? Banish. Okay, not sure that should translate. You could use it for Havdalah. Avery?
Assuming we don't actually know when Shabbat is, this entire Shabbat situation is kind of the evidence, so maybe...
Okay, we're getting warmer there. Jared?
It's possible that like the kid is not really a key part of Havdalah. You can just say
that. Okay, we'll get there in a second. Yeah. Jordan? Oh, you're both Jordan, actually. Okay, Jordan from Miami? Just kidding. Yeah, good. Okay. Okay. Ah, very good. That's what I wanted to say. Okay, what did Rashi say? What are you doing here? You do an act of symbolic commemoration that there's a concept called Shabbat. Maybe at that point, you don't need the normal halachic rules for Havdalah. I'm not genuinely trying to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush and Havdalah. I have no clue. I only have like a seventh chance anyway. Right, 1 out of 7 is a pretty bad batting average. Right, I have a very little chance. It's just that I want to commemorate Shabbat. So if that's true, I think you could break the rules. I'm not trying to fulfill the normal Shabbat rules. That'd be my answer. Yeah, Joe.
It doesn't seem to say that the reason you can do it on Shabbat is just like, it's not really a mitzvah, it's just that you remind yourself. Yet he seems to be saying, just people that see your Shabbat.
Okay. Joe, you cannot look at my reading Ritva. It's okay with me. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in your Joe.
Okay. So how would you, that's fine. How would you respond to my question, though?
But I think in this case, it's not really like, it's not really dependent on whether it's sooner or not, it's just like you're trying to make the dough and connecting it to the pot. Like, it's not, I don't think, like, we made the comparison to like Edge Oak, where like, oh, if you're an Edge Oak, then you don't just take a lemon. I think the dough in this situation is, instead of saying it's like, it's not really a dough, and therefore we can like do whatever we want with it, it's not a regular dough.
Okay, Harry, what do you think?
I think if you want to argue that it's not actually a Havdalah or Simon Mitzvah, then the whole thing would be a bracha or challah.
We'll get there in a second about the bracha. Okay, we'll get there in a second. Okay, before I get to most of you guys, maybe I'll try to, I'm happy you disagree with me, but I'll try to push my point a little bit further. Let's say the guy doesn't have wine or bread. Okay, I don't know what to say. What plant should we make grows in that midbar? What's he eating?
Cactus.
Yeah, we eat something a little more enticing. Can you eat cacti? Is there any part of the cacti that's edible? Okay, there you go. Fine. So he's just eating sabras. Okay? Very Israeli. So now, what do you guys say? Should he make Havdalah on the sabra because he has no other choice?
Yeah, based on...
Right? What if he doesn't have any sabras? All he does is, read Pushkin's short stories. Should he make Havdalah on Pushkin? Like, just because you don't have something else doesn't make this kosher. Right? There's still things that are kosher and things that aren't kosher. Yeah, Moses Vini. Yeah, you'd imagine someone in this situation, we would not say that anymore. In fact, I can even prove it. Okay, Moses is right. We normally don't eat till you make Havdalah ala kos, but if you know you're not going to be able to say Havdalah for 24 hours, we don't make you fast. We say at that point, just start eating already. So I assume he'd be in that context. Yeah, Lewis.
I'm not kidding. I didn't say that Havdalah is
say just like the Yemen, maybe there's some difference between like red in the context of a civilized area and red not in the context of a civilized area because they have something to do with the Yemen or something.
You're saying bread? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, bread somehow takes on new significance in. Okay, that's interesting. I have to give it some thought. I'll give it some thought. Gabe Shrek, can you move to the back over there? Guys, I'm going to point out Gabe made a very nice picture over there. Gabe is a multi talented fellow. Okay, very good. Yeah, Jacob Katz. No, okay. So, no, the double the amount gets in the problems that we can't justify doing extra malacha, right? That you can't circumvent. Every day has an equal chance of being Shabbat. What? Okay, hang on there. But malacha on Shabbos is pretty serious in halacha. So pikuach nefesh could override that on a daily basis. But apparently making Shabbos different can't override malacha. That's what seems to emerge here. Yeah, Jordan Cohen.
So there's two recorded cases in our history where one in the desert when they only had mud, so you could say maybe that's a reason that you could make an akala in like an extreme case, because the Jews had to see, maybe there was no concept of a formalized kiddush, but there was some idea of kiddush because there was an idea of Shabbos. And number two is
wait, what a good kiddush there, Jordan. Wait, that's great. Saying the first 40 years of kiddush recital was made on bread. Wow, you just thought of that right now.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And the other thing is when Rashbi was in a cave, apparently all he had was beets and carrots and water. So what was he?
There's got to be some Achron who wants to know what he made Kiddush on. It can't be no Achron asked that question. Okay. Oh, that was good, Jordan. Okay, Jordan, we're thinking out of the box there, Jordan Cohen. Okay, yeah.
Okay, there in a second.
Okay, Jacob John, let's just finish the Ritva. He said, mentioned ain lo pot. You might, in the desert, you might equally have no wine and no bread. Mekadoshu ma'avdil b'tfila. So it could be, you probably have heard this idea, guys. It could be that the Doraita Kiddush doesn't really need any object. It doesn't need any food. When you say Kiddush Friday night in davening, when you say Vayechulu, it could be you already filled the biblical Kiddush. And then the wine is a rabbinic add-on. So maybe the desert island person had to do Kiddush of Abdullah. He doesn't have a food item. He just does it by a recital. Now, he does say something very interesting. Because I think this good. You could like trap people if you ask them this question. If you want to be very pedantic. You might say there's one holy day we don't make Kiddush. I think most of us would say every Shabbos and Yom Tov you make Kiddush. Yom Kippur, because you can't eat, okay, so there's no Kiddush. But what does the Ritva point out? If you say that the real Kiddush is Betzvila, it turns out we all say Kiddush in Yom Kippur. But we say the Yom Kippur davening Friday night, it talks about Yom Kippur. Lo and behold, we've all said Kiddush. Okay, so just to sum up this Ritva, he wants to say, easiest answer is you just do it in Tefillah, or somehow, in some special reason, you can make Havdalah on pot in this context. We have a Machlokas team, myself and most of this year here, right? I thought that was because it's not really Havdalah. You guys don't think it's the language of the Ritva. You have to come up with some svara why it really is Havdalah. Yeah, Jacob Matrani.
Just a kasha on what Jordan Cohen said. Mom can't taste like grape juice.
Okay, so I'm not going to get into a debate about it, but if you really want to be super halachic, well, I'll say two things. I'll make a chumash point and a halachic point. Okay, it's true that we all went to medrash in elementary school that mom tastes like whatever you want it to. Okay, it's not clear in chumash, that's the pshat. In fact, chumash gives two tastes for man. Okay, anyone know what they are? At one point, it's tzaf yichit bedvash. At one point, it's lesher hashamin. Okay, I would translate both of them. I'm actually don't really know what they are. But one is tzaf yichit bedvash, and one is lesher hashamin. So simple pshat is that man does have a taste. Okay, but the second thing I would say, if you want to be really halachic about it, really achronish about it, Jacob Matrani, even if the man tastes like wine, it doesn't make it wine. Okay, yeah, Jacob Katz. Right, that's, I think Jordan Cohen's heading that direction. Okay, right, Jordan? Yeah.
If you only have a certain amount of wine, does he save it for Kiddush, or does he do that, or does he do
that? Well, what's more important in halacha, Kiddush or Abdullah?
Kiddush.
Yeah.
So you say that.
Oh, because of the bread thing, the bread factor.
No, let's say he's stuck in the desert. If he doesn't know what he's going to find, people are going to say, so he cuts Shabbos, so he counts the 6 days Shabbos, and comes to make Kiddush, comes with Abdullah, he realizes I only have a certain amount of
I understand. It's a good question. Simon?
What was the reason why you couldn't just get the tefillah? Why
No, he's trying to get you through Kiddush Avdol, even every level of obligation. So maybe I'm even able to do the food part. I just do it on bread and not on wine.
So a sabra in Kiddush
Avdol. I'm sorry?
A sabra in, like if you're in the desert, like by the cactus, that would work just as well as bread.
Well, you're arguing according to my reading or according to everybody else's reading?
I'm arguing according to your reading.
I still think no, because I still think you want something that has a Kiddush and Avdol feel to it. Okay, but you could quibble that. Yeah, Midrash Max.
So just on your point before, what you said to Machani, that just because something doesn't taste like wine, therefore it's not wine. The entire point of the Ritva, I think, is that you're constructing a reality that's not an actual reality, but it's assumed to be a reality.
So yeah, no, but we're not okay. Yeah, just we're getting a little sidetracked here because of Jordan Cohen thinking out of the box. You don't have man in the desert. You don't have man in the desert island. Okay.
Right.
He was then bringing an analogy, what was Kiddush like in the 40 years in the desert.
Okay. Also, can Tosefet Shabbos shed light on the case? Because Tosefet Shabbos, or where you either bring it later or bring it earlier, because you're saying that it is Shabbos, even though qualitatively it's not inherently Shabbos that day, but yet you're constructing yourself a reality.
Oh, that's clever. That's a clever point. It's a clever analogy, but I don't think it's exactly analogous, but I'm going to leave it for now.
What are other types of beverages? Like, let's say you haven't defined like a case of rum.
Well, it gets to my question before, like how we define Chamar Medina. Okay, there's a range. Okay, try to make a face. Do you want a quick contention about how you define Chamar Medina? Or no, should we move on? What do you guys prefer? All right, moving on. Okay. All right, I'll do it for 5 seconds. Okay. Ravad Yosef says Chamar Medina has to be alcoholic. Alcoholic things make you happier, and therefore, according to Ravad Yosef, it's very strict, actually, if you're Sephardi. Okay, most of you get this down. Okay, according to Ravad, you could use whiskey or beer or, you know, other kinds of beverages, but by definition, Coca-Cola and orange juice, they're all out.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. This is very interesting. The first time I taught this, one of my students asked me, well, what about grape juice? Oh my God, what a good question. So I asked my colleague, Rabbi David Grofsky, and he had a good point. He said, grape juice got lucky because it halachically got defined as wine. Because grape juice is also made from grapes, so it got defined as wine, so somehow it snuck in. Even though it's not alcoholic, it has a din yayin, and therefore you could use it, but of course, yeah. Well, that's debatable. Not for us right now. Okay, but in any case, Rav Yosef has to be alcoholic. Rav Moshe Feinstein does not think it has to be alcoholic. So in theory, according to Rav Moshe, you can use a lot of other drinks. But Rav Moshe is a very interesting distinction. He says they're drinks you only drink to solve a problem. Like you walk in the house and you're thirsty, say, give me water. I'm thirsty. There are other drinks you drink because they add luster to the occasion. Like let's say you guys come to my house and I serve a bottle of wine. Right? You might say, I'm not interested. But you wouldn't say, Rabbi, I'm not thirsty. Right, I would say it's not about thirst. What does that have to do with anything? Right? Wine is to, you know, make the occasion fancier. Right? Moshe says a drink that's just a problem solver, like you're thirsty, you're hot, that's not Chamar Medina. A drink that you drink to add to the occasion, that is, so in theory, emotion needs to be worked out. It's a very interesting theory. Right? In theory, maybe even coffee and tea is okay, according to, depending on your society. Right? What's the place of coffee and tea? Yeah?
The changes in the person, like if you're an alcoholic, you can't use whiskey? Or
meaning Ramosha's theory? Or?
Yeah.
Look, I think Ramosha would say you're on a societal basis. I think, you know, everybody decides on a one-to-one. Okay, we'll go to that. All right, guys, let's move on. Okay, now we discussed so far doing malacha and making Kiddush and Avdol. What about other aspects of Shabbat? So let's do a little bit outside because we had a longer conversation than I anticipated on the first part. What about tchumen? There's an issur to go out of a tchum on Shabbat, right? You're supposed to stay within city limits and only walk 2,000 amot beyond. Just to clarify, guys, city limits doesn't mean like just because like you hit the Teaneck Englewood border, it doesn't mean like 2,000 amot. Kicks in. It means beyond civilization. Like as long as you're in a civilized society, you can walk endlessly. But once you walk beyond civilized society, there's a limit. That's called Isser Tchum. What's interesting about that Isser is it's not a malacha. You normally think, what Shabbat? There's 39 malacha that are asur. That's it. No, there's apparently other Isurim that are not part of malacha Shabbat. So how would those Isurim play into the role? Right? Here, this guy, presumably, he wants to walk a lot. Why does he want to walk a lot? He'd like to regain his place in society. So how do we view this guy? So let's start with it's an interesting contrast here. Okay, let's start with Tosu. Let's start with the Ramban. Okay, according to the Ramban's first approach, how does it work? How does Tchumen work for this guy? He could work as much as he wants 6 days a week, and on Shabbos, he sticks within the Tchumen. What's the problem then? Wait, that means the seventh day is not only different in terms of Kiddush and Avdol, there's another difference. Why did the Gemara say the difference in the seventh day is Tchumen? How does he answer that, guys?
No,
that's a different answer.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. We want it to be different in an active way. But you actively declare Shabbat, and Tchumen is not active. Kiddush and Avdol are active. Okay, again, what's the assumption? Answer one, There's another difference between day seven. You don't walk outside the tchum. What's the Ramban's second approach? Actually, even on the seventh day, you can walk as much as you want. Just like malacha is the same all 7 days, tchum is the same all 7 days. What's his argument now? Why? Tchumin midivrayim. What's tchum midivrayim? Ah, it sounds like tchumin. We can be malacha is nisa deraita. We're more strict about it. Maybe safek deraita lachumra. Tchumin's the rabbanon. Perhaps we could just say safek deraita lakula. So on all 7 days, you have to restrict your malacha performance. On all 7 days, you don't have to restrict your tchum. Okay, I want to contrast this, though, with Tosfot. Tosfot has the same two approaches, but when Tosfot's explaining why you can walk beyond the tchum, what's Tosfot's answer? Well, just he doesn't say this explicitly, but what fact does Tosfot say at the end of the first line? Exactly. He needs to get back to civilization. That need maybe has force even on his Shabbos day. Right, so I think there's a big difference. Let me just sum up for a second. I think there's three opinions. You could say 6 days a week he walks as much as he wants, and the seventh day he keeps the laws of Tchumen, which would mean day seven has two differences, the Kiddush and Avdol difference and the Tchum difference. You could say all 7 days he can walk as much as he wants. But now there'd be a split. Why? And I think it's interesting which way you go. You could say the seventh day is different. Sorry, it could be Mekel on Tchumen because it's the Rabbanan. You could say you're Mekel on Tchum because it's like a long-term Pikuach Nefesh. We need to get this guy out of the midbar. If we restrict his walking every seventh day, he might not survive. So maybe from that long-term Pikuach Nefesh, he could do it every 7 days. Could everyone tell me a nafka mina between the two svaras, guys? One svar is you could make on Tchum because Tchum and the Rabbanan. Another svar is you could make on Tchum because we got him to get it back to society. What is a huge nafka mina between the two of them? Someone besides Jordan Stauber. All right, Sam.
What's the matter of Pikuach Nefesh?
Okay, but give me a case where they would disagree. You're on the right track. Jordan?
With all derabbanans.
Yes, excellent. I was waiting for someone to say that. What about other derabbanans? If I say the only reason I'm mekel on tchum is because he needs to get back to society, so why would that, I'll give you an example, guys. I'll give you a silly example just to make the point. Okay, let's say the guy is cooking food. He wants that. He's a frum Jew. Let's say it's, I shouldn't use rabbini. We don't have to be trapped on a desert island. But the guy insisted on having cholent even on a desert island. Okay, so he's going to have cholent. So, but he says, wait. But if it's an uncooked, uncovered flame, is this a Rabbanan, right? Because there's no blech, right? There's no plata there. So does he need to make a blech for his chalent the next day? Right, so if you say, Sefek deraita l'chum, Sefek deraban l'kula, so just like we're mekel on tchum, he can mekel on the blech. If you say we're only mekel on tchum because getting it back to civilization, so the blech doesn't help him, or the absence of the blech doesn't help him get back to civilization. So I think there is a big naf community there. Okay, we got tchum down before we move on. Yeah, Jacob. And therefore? Okay, very good. This requires a lot of thought. Jacob has made a great point, and I'm still thinking about it. I know the answer. Okay, Jacob's right. There are certain restrictions of the Pikuach Nefesh that are in long term. I'll give you a very famous tshuva. Okay, wake up Jared Feingold. This is interesting. Okay, so for example, okay, there's a famous note of Yehuda. Okay, the note of Yehuda was asked about autopsies. Okay, you perform autopsies for medical knowledge, right? One of the reasons that medicine progressed in the modern world is because doctors started cutting up cadavers and getting knowledge. Okay, it's a whole interesting study, but not for us right now. There's a great book called The Knife Man about John Hunter. You should all read it. Okay, about cadavers. Okay, but in any case, the Noah DeBehuda said, his famous theory, you can't do it unless what he calls chole lefanenu. What's chole lefanenu? If there's a given sick person I know about who's going to be helped, right, then I could do the cut of the cadaver. But in theory, it might provide information that would help someone someday. He says, that's not Pikuach Nefesh. And I think there's certain logic to it. Because if you let any possibility be Pikuach Nefesh, you can always violate Shabbat. Right? Or violate other halachot. So, Jacob, you're on to something. I would like to argue, even according to the view, you could view this as a little bit more like cholel lefaneinu. Okay? But you're on to something. You do have to figure out like when you're allowed to use those long-term Pikuach Nefesh arguments. It's a very good point. Yeah, Moses. Okay.
Right.
Okay. 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 Fair enough. Okay. Yeah, Jordan.
Can you say that with regards to the doing, it depends on the situation, the two situations that the Gemara offers, because in the derech it implies that you know where you're going, so there's no concern of getting back.
Oh, that's clever. Yeah. That's clever. Okay, let's move on. Now, when you open the Mishnah Berurah, right, you have, of course, the Mishnah Berurah. On the other side, you have the Bir Halacha. Okay, who compiled the Bir Halacha? It is also the Chafetz Chaim. What's the difference between them? So it's almost like he's playing Rashi and Tosfot simultaneously. Right? The Mishnah Berurah is Rashi. It's like a running commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. The Bir Halacha is if you want to have an extended analysis of a given topic. Okay, so the Bir Halacha is a little more Tosfot-like. And usually more lumdus in analysis than the Bir Halacha. So the Bir Halacha is a good question. We've discussed so far Malacha. We've discussed Tchumin. We've discussed Kiddush and Abdullah. But what about Tefillin? Does he put on Tefillin every day? Right? Each day could be Shabbat. On Shabbat, we don't wear Tefillin. This is important to know. We'll get back to this very shortly. Why do we wear Tefillin on Shabbat, according to the Gemara? Avery? Good. There aren't so many mitzvot that are described in the Torah as an oat. Shabbat and Tefillin are. We seem to say, when you have the Shabbat oat, then there's no need for the Tefillin oat. On any given day, though, there's no Shabbat oat, so you do have the Tefillin oat. Yeah, Ben?
What's the reason for Tefillin? Is there some aspect of the area should carry
it? Don't think so. Okay, in fact, some of you may know, in Chutz La'aretz, different communities have different minhagim about wearing Tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay, you guys wear that? You can all figure it out now. Why should there be a debate whether we should wear Tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Because what exactly, what's the oat? Does Chol HaMoed have the oat quality? Right, Shabbos and Yom Tov certainly have the oat quality. Chol HaMoed is kind of in between, right? It's not a full Shem Malacha, but the mitzvah supply, is it an oat or not? Now you can see why we could debate endlessly why we wear Tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Since you're right, I have to throw this in. Why do Sephardim and Hasidim tend to not wear Tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Yes, because they like Kabbalah, right? The Zohar is adamantly against wearing Tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay, so if you're curious why Sephardim and Hasidim don't wear, now you know. Yeah, Jacob Katz.
Are we
going
to get to the topic before you about,
like, the probability? We'll get there in a second. Okay, so let's do the Bir Halacha outside, just because we're running out of time here, guys. What's the Bir Halacha's argument about Tefillin? What does he say? Should you put on or not?
Yes.
Why? Rove. So here, let's get to Jacob Katz's point. Halacha, like any legal system, has cases of doubt, cases of safek, and there are various methods halacha uses to resolve safek. One obvious method would be rov. What do you do when you're not sure about life? Follow the majority. From a rov perspective, what should we say about tefillin? Yeah, every day you had a 6 out of 7 chance is chol. So wear tefillin. Terrific. Okay, so maybe you wear tefillin because you rely on the rov. That's a good argument. Okay, however, his second argument is much more clever. What is the Bir Halacha's second argument? He's saying you're going to wear tefillin all 7 days. Even on your Shabbos day, you're going to wear tefillin. Why are you going to wear tefillin even on your Shabbos day? Well, before we get there, well, first of all, the same rove applies. Even on your Shabbos day, you still got a 6 out of 7 chance that it's chol. But what's his second argument, though, Jacob? You said it. Very clever. What if the oat quality of Shabbat is the fact that you don't do malacha? But this guy is doing malacha. So he lacks the oat quality. And therefore, isn't that clever? Not just the rove. Inherently, he should be wearing tefillin. We don't care, even if you're right that it's Shabbat, he should be wearing tefillin. Right? What makes Shabbat an ode is not doing malacha. He's not desisting from malacha. Give me 1 second, guys. Now, there's an obvious question to ask here. Don't worry. I'll give you a good rule for life. If you have an obvious question, it's probably a good question, but it's also probably asked in the next 2 lines of the source you're reading. Okay? So he has a great question. Wait. What if someone, forget the midbar, just someone's sick. And therefore, has to malacha on Shabbat. When we say, let's say you have a case like that, guys. Oh, you give a great example. Okay, I never thought of this before. This is great. I'll have to put this in my teaching repertoire when I have to jazz up a board cheer. Okay, I twice in my life have driven on Shabbat. Okay, once when my wife went into labor for our second child, and once on a Friday night, our oldest banged his head, and we thought he had a concussion, and I drove him to Yerushalayim. Okay, both cases, I drove from Lawrence to Yerushalayim on Shabbat. It's great, by the way, guys. There's very little traffic. It's really wonderful. Okay, so... Okay, so it happened twice. But according to this Bir Halacha, you come with this wacky theory. What should I have done when I showed up in Shari Tzedek? I should put on tefillin. Right? I had just done Malacha. Shabbos was no longer an oath for me. Right? That's obviously not true. Okay, did anyone catch how he gets out of that? How does he get out of that problem? Yeah, Moses? Okay, but he says even a deeper point. Why is this Midbar guy not experiencing the oat quality of Shabbat in a more profound way? Yeah, Joey? Okay, so some of it might be me versus everybody else. Good, and? Think about it, guys. For the guy in the Midbar, all...
Well, the whole point is that it was like, it was like God and man, but it actually is inherently Shabbat, so
okay, I'll go one step further, guys. In the Midbar case, all, from a Malacha perspective, is Shabbat different at all? No, all 70 is the exact same. What does he do? I do enough malacha to survive. So there's no oat quality in malacha whatsoever. In my case, after I got it to Shari Tzedek, I stopped the malacha, right? And the other 6 days of the week, I did malacha all day. So even though I did a brief act of malacha on Shabbat, it's still different than every other day. So you'd say, in the Midbar case, there's no oat quality. In my case, there is. So just to sum up, I'll take comments now. Very fascinating bir halacha. He says you should wear tefillin all 7 days. Why? Either the probability game, you rely on the rov, or maybe even without the probability game, Shabbat loses its oat quality for such a person, and he's chayav in tefillin. Avery. Ah, so you're on the right track. It's what Harry pointed out before. What's the key, the million-dollar question here? What aspect makes a day an oat?
Right. So
but you guys, get back to Chol HaMoed for a second. Could you make the same argument? You could say, what makes Pesach Chol HaMoed an oat? That you don't need chametz. So if that's true, obviously Chol HaMoed is an oat. No tefillin. Or you could say, no, it's only a full Isser Malacha that creates the oat quality. And Chol HaMoed doesn't have a full Isser Malacha. So you're right, Avery. I'm not sure why the Bir Halacha is so convinced that it's the Malacha. But he does start, that's his starting point there. Malacha is what makes a note.
And I'd say a further proof that is we evaluate, for example, the sign that a bell creates so much that we'll even like throw a bread to make sure we have that.
Look, Avery, no one's suggesting that we don't value Havdalah. But that's not the same as what gives Shabbat its oat quality.
I'm saying that
way. Okay, fair enough. Okay, Zach Katz, I want to tell you two things about Zach Katz, guys. First of all, he's the most serious guy in Yeshiva because he finished my book yesterday. Okay, he's a very serious guy. Second of all, there's only one thing getting in the way of Zach Katz being a Talmud Chacham. Okay, playing that big head basketball game. Zach, just give it up. Just give it up. It's not true in real life. Gordon Hayward, he hasn't missed a three since 2013. Just give it up. Zach, just win Torah. Okay. Yeah, Zach, go ahead.
Tefillah-wise, what do we do?
Is there a commentary on like, who's interesting. Okay, it is discussed, but I'm going to leave it be for now. It's a very good question. Okay, it is discussed on Chorin. Remind me to show you later. He wants to. Okay, we're exploring four aspects of Shabbat already, which are Kiddush and Avdalah, Isser Malacha, Tchumin, and Tefillin. So Zach had a good question. What about davening? Like, what's his liturgy? Does he say the Chol Tefillah every day? What does he say on day seven? Okay, that's a very good question. Okay, that's a good question. Yeah. Why? All right. No, the question is not what is he even doing? What does he do now? Meaning now, I don't know what day it is. What if I'm going to do 6 days of Chol, one day of Shabbat, how do I daven? Okay, yeah, take it.
Yeah, I guess also later that, like, in terms of like, probably, like, in what scenario you just drop it, you have no clue what Shabbat is.
So there actually is a part of the moment which I skipped, which is you do know enough to know that today's not Shabbat, but you don't know what day Shabbat is. So the Gemara does have a discussion of that case.
Yes,
okay, there is such a case. I'm not dealing with it right now.
But also, like, shouldn't you just, like, you know, like maybe wait, like, 3 days and then do Shabbat and then start the 7 days life? Because if you wait 6 days, you're almost bound to, you know, to transgress Shabbat completely.
Like, no, but don't forget, the Gemara's solution is you're doing the same amount of malach every day. So you're not saving anything by, there's no switching at that point. Well, every day, I do enough just to malach to survive.
You try getting, like your rituals as close to Shabbat as possible.
No, but what if I'm really clueless about what day Shabbat is? There's no such thing as close as possible. The person's just clueless. Okay, we're good. Actually, I'll get to you later. I just want to make sure we get to two more things. Okay, let us now go ahead now to an interesting question. Okay, so we go to source 7. Okay, there was a rabbi who was called what was his name? Actually, we wrote it down here. Rav Dov Beresh Weidenfeld. He died in 1965. He's known as the Chabina Rav, the Rav from Chabina. So he says, he was asked the following question. What about making a bracha on tefillin? We said so far there's two reasons to put on tefillin. But could you make a bracha? Now let's say we're going to reject the second reason. We're going to reject the oat reason. We're going to go with the rove reason. Okay, so is rove enough? Rove demands you put on tefillin. Is rove also enough to justify making a bracha? Now if we're talking about a suffix, what rule might someone plug in here? Not only is there a rule suffix, there's also a rule called Safek brachot lahakel. Okay, normally if you're not sure if you have to make a bracha, you don't make it. Okay, what's the one exception to that rule? Very good. Why? So it's interesting. Safek brachot lahakel is a little bit of a misnomer. The reason why this rule called safek brachot lahakel is really because of the rule called safek drabban lahakel. If you actually have a bracha that's deraita, we no longer say it. Okay, so, but there is a rule of safek brachot lahakel. So maybe you shouldn't say it. Okay, so then the Chabina Rav says something very interesting. Okay, Jordan, stop. I'll get to you in a second. Let me just finish this. Okay, let's talk about Sefiras Omer for a second, guys. Okay, if you forgot, oh, we all hate that when you forget a day of Sefiras Omer, the worst thing possible, right? Okay, you don't get the cheesecake reward at the end of the tunnel. So you forget a day of Sefiras Omer. What are you supposed to do? You count from then on without a bracha. Why is that? Why do you count without a bracha? Well, what's the suffix? Because I'm famous machlokas between the Bahag and Tosfot. The Bahag says, if I don't do all 49 days, I've blown it. Tosfot says, what are you talking about? Each day is separate. So according to Tosfot, if I miss a day, it's not a crisis. According to the Bahag, once I miss a day, I really have blown everything. Since we're not sure if Tosfot is right or the Bahag is right, therefore, what do we say? Do without a bracha. Right? So that's classic suffix bracha lakel. We do the mitzvah for the rest of the time of Omer without a bracha. Okay, but now he points out something very clever. What if I can't remember if I said Sefirat Omer on a given day? Okay, 27th day of Omer comes. I was, I was really feeling it in the Beit Midrash that night. Okay, I was thinking about my sukkah throughout Marv. Right, therefore I can't even remember what I did. So I was really thinking about a Tosfos and Baba Metzia. I don't remember if I said it or not. So what's the Tovim Misharim say? What's the Psak? You would be able to make a bracha. Why is that? Because there's a famous rule called the Sfake Sfeka. If I've got two different doubts, and either of those doubts would enable me to say it's okay. So there's two different reasons why it might be okay. So therefore, I can assume it's okay. It happens in Yisurim all the time. If it's fake sveka, I could be mati or something. In that case, guys, what's the fake sveka? One possibility is I did say it. So then it doesn't matter who's right, Tosfot and the Bahag. Even if the Bahag's right, I said it. What's the other suffix? Even if I forgot to say it, maybe Tosfot is right, and therefore I can still go. So this is two totally independent reasons, two different sefekot that might justify my continuing, so I can continue with a bracha. Okay, haven't got that down? It's good for the drawers, what a sfeik is. Okay, so a sfeik works, and I could say a bracha. Okay, now comes the most interesting part. Okay, what was our case? There's no sfeik in our case in the Midbar. What halakhic mechanism do we want to use to put it on? Rov. Wait, let's think for a second. Some of you in Rav Dovich, I think, discuss this. Why does a sfeik sveka work in halacha? So what's one possibility? Sfeik sveka is simply a rov. If I've got, like if I make four boxes there, right? In a sfeik sveka, what are my percentages in the four boxes? I got 3 out of 4, right? 3 out of 4 possibilities, right? Should I do it? Do I understand that? I have to explain why. I'll do it for 1 second. Okay, those of us who are not visual math people. Okay, we got Tosfos versus the Bahag. Those are two possibilities. Okay, according to Tosfos, the 49 days are separate. According to Bahag, it's all one continuum. Then I've got eventuality. I did say Sphere, eventuality two. I did. Let's do all the four logical possibilities. Possibility one. I said it, and Tosfot is right. How am I doing then? Oh, I'm in great shape. Okay, got both factors going for me. Okay, I didn't say it, and Tosfot is right. How am I doing? Still good. Okay, I didn't say it. Sorry. What did I just do? I didn't say it, and Tosfot is right. Okay, I said it, and the Bahag's right. I'm still good. Fourth possibility. I didn't say it, and the Bahag's right? Yeah. I can't. So 3 out of the 4 eventualities, I'm good. Maybe every sveik sveika is simply another way of saying rov. It's not a separate halakhic concept. So if that's true, if I already know that sveik sveika could justify a bracha, so too, rov could justify a bracha. Everyone good with that so far? Okay, but all that is predicated assumption that every sveik sveika is simply another way of saying rov. What if I investigated the halakha and I discovered that sveik sveika seems to work differently than rov? Right, it has different rules, it has different force. Then it would be an open question once again. Okay, Jordan.
I'm not sure if that's true, but if we're saying that the tefillin goes by rov, then why don't we say that Shabbos
goes by rov? Ah, so a lot of Achronim ask your question. Okay, in fact, I was debating whether to get into it, but I think I'll do it for 1 second. Evan, go back to the Bir Halacha for 1 second. Okay, I'm going to teach you a very difficult principle. It's very good to hear, because every once in a while as a teacher, you're tempted to, like, avoid difficult principles, right? And then, like, a student keeps you honest. It's very good, guys. You should keep us honest. Keep us, keep your teachers honest. Okay, so look at the Bir Halacha on Afilu B'Yom Shemekadesh. Okay? Let's think of that. So Jordan's right. If Rove wins, Rove should win either for Malacha. You have to wear tefillin. How do you deal with a safek? Go after the rov. So how do you make kiddush? Notice, sounds like me, right? How's he describing the kiddush there? It sounds like it's not so much a real kiddush, it's just a way of promoting the idea of Shabbos? Umasha asur b'malaka machol yom. Now, that's your question, Jordan. Wait, if there's a robe, why does the robe allow you to do malacha? Ef shemishim da'aso rabbanon kikavua. Okay, now this, there's no way you get that reference unless you weren't psachim, okay, or ksuos. But the Gemara says as follows. Okay, there's a rule, and it's very hard to understand. You know, most times when the Gemara has a logical position, everyone knows why. We could understand why. Here, the Gemara has a position. It's very difficult to explain the logic. The Gemara says as follows. If I have a safek, kol deparish meruba parish. If that item got separated from its main location, you could assume it came from the robe. What does that mean? If there are 10 butcher stores in your town, 9 are kosher, 1 is straight, if you find a piece of meat in the street, what are you allowed to assume? It's kosher, you got a rope. Okay, but here's what's very hard to understand. Okay, remember, kol de parish, meruba parish. The Gemara then goes to say, kol kavua, kemechza al mechza. If I found the meat in the store, but I can't remember which store it's from, for some reason, what's kemechza al mechza? I ignore the robe and I treat it as 50-50. Okay, so somehow I'm only allowed to rely on the robe in parish, not in kavua. That seems counterintuitive in a very profound way. If you're curious, there's a very interesting fellow in Efrat whose name is Moshe Kapel. He's written a good book on the history of halakha called Meta Halakha. He's a mathematician. He actually has a great deal in life. Every once in a while, even though I really love what I do, I wonder if I should have taken his brooch, because he somehow managed to, like, you know, teach 3 hours a week and support his family. He really worked it out there. So he's interested in all the interface between... Oh, actually, he's friendly with the Roberts family. Okay, he actually knew all the interface between math and Gemara. So if you're ever interested in math and Gemara, he's your man. In fact, I'll tell you two things about him. Oh, this is really good. If you get this guy, he's really great. Get this fact out. You can use it to impress your friends at good cocktail parties. Okay, what Masechet and Mishnah would be, someone who's interested in probability would be fascinated in. You know, there's one Masechet and Mishnah. It's a really obscure one. Does anybody know the answer to that? I'll give you a really bad hint. It's in Seder Kutchim. Okay, that's not a good hint. Okay, there is a Masechet in Seder Kutchim called Kinim. Kinim is about, it's not from the word Kinim with Chaf, lice. It's not a Masechet of lice. There's no Masechet of lice. It's about Kan, like birds. Okay, if I have like various birds, some are meant to be an Ola, some are meant to be a Chata, and I mix them up. How can I play the probability game to figure out what to do with the birds? The entire Masechet is about mathematical probability. Okay, so what? Okay, so Maish Kapel has a book on that Masechet. Okay, and he also has a discussion how to explain why Parish should be different than Kavua. I'm not going to get to right now, but in a once you can look it up online. If you can't find it, I'll send it to you. So, Jordan, if you get back to your question, though, what did he say? But notice his language. It's not really kavua. How does he phrase it in the Birla Clear? Isn't it interesting? Aso rabban and kavua. What does it sound like? He sounds like he really thinks on a deraita level, I could do as much malach as I want every day. But the rabbis decided we should treat it as a kavua case, which is debatable. I just want to point out that's the position he's taking. That is the position the Birla Clear just took. Aso rabban and kavua. Okay, now you know what it means. Ah, so it sounds like he thinks it's inherently kavua. Look, you have to forget what is the logic and what is the criteria of parish versus kavua, and then play this case in. Okay, which is, that's a whole other thing which we can't get into right now. Yeah, Jacob. You're trying to get the logic of Parsh versus Kavua? Okay, that's interesting, but I don't get it right now. Okay, let's just sum up where we did the last point here. Okay, let's see what we got here. According to the Gemara, what's the Malacha sock here? For the 7 days? Every day is the same, right? Treat it like Shabbos, do only enough to survive. We have to deal with Jordan's question why we don't rely on the roof. Great. From a Kiddush Navdala perspective, what does the Gemara say? May Kiddush Navdala only on day 7. Okay, why according to Rashi? You don't forget that it's Shabbat. Okay, according to the Ritva, how are you yotzei the mitzvah of Kiddush and Avdalah? Either by tfila or bread. And that would be huge Kiddush according to the Ritva, that in this context, you could use bread for Avdalah. We have nice machloket. Like, I think it's because it's not really Avdalah, and the students here think, for some reason, you can suddenly make Avdalah on bread. Yeah, Avi.
Do you wash for the bread if they make it Avdalah?
Sure.
Yeah.
We just like in Kiddush. Guys, get this down. We know that the German minhag is to wash before Kiddush. Even if you're not German, if you're making Kiddush on bread, you wash before Kiddush. Okay? Yes?
The Nachmir or the Harry Anderson is if you know when Shabbos is, but you're stuck in the desert, then you use bread.
Very good. That's a sharp point. Jordan, very good. Okay, so we got Kiddush on bread, we got Malacha then. What about Tchum? We had three positions. Either you walk as much as you want 6 days, but on Shabbos you don't walk. Or all 7 days you walk. Why? Either because otherwise you'll never get back to civilization, or because Tchum is Durabana and the Savik Durabana Lahakel, as Jordan Stabler very well said, Nafkamina, other Durabanas. Okay, great. So that's that. Tfillin, what do we say? Put on Tfillin every day. Why? Why do you put Tfillin on your Shabbos day? Either Rov or a second Tzara? You have to because it's not Shabbos, not an oath. Great. Next, the Shabina Rav says, can I make a bracha? He says, obviously, because we know that what happens in Sfira Omer? If a Sveik Sveika could enable you to make a bracha, so too Rov. Very interesting assumption. What's his assumption? Sveik Sveika is just another form of Rov. That really has to be analyzed. Is that true? What if Sveik Sveika is different than Rov? Okay. Now, this is really an intriguing shir. I think it's a very interesting topic. I love giving shir on it. But let's, for the sake of argument, say, okay, since it couldn't have any practical ramifications. I'm going to show you something interesting that emerges. Evan, go to the last source. We'll close with this. Source 9. Okay, I know when you learn Gemara, you tend to learn, most people tend to learn Rishonim more than Achronim. So the Pnei Yeshua is very important, Achron on Shas. Very good parish. He also had a very interesting and tragic life. Okay, the Pnei Yeshua was a Rav in Germany in the 1700s. He actually, believe it or not, there was a gunpowder explosion in his house, and his first wife and daughter were killed. And then he got remarried. You could read the introduction to Pnei Yeshua. He tells the whole story. Okay, guys, read the introduction. He got remarried. Put that in your illustration. Okay, he got remarried, thank God, and had a nice family, but he had a little bit of a tragic life. Yeah, Jonathan.
I ask this question. I'm curious to know, if you come onto a deserted island and you have an idea where Shabbos is, then over time you kind of, you get lost in time, but you kind of think you know what it is, use it as a sensei.
That's a very good question. I'm ducking for now because I'm running out of time. That's a very good question. Okay. Excellent. Okay, go to Pnei Yeshua, guys. So he says in the second line, go to Machlokas Achronim. Hataz v'shachol b'apichad shimon ha'yisrael demekilin b'sveik sveika afilo heicha ditchazek isura. Okay, guys, let's go back to my case of suffering. How do you deal with a suffering? Let's say you don't have a roof. What's another method halacha deals with sveikot? Follow the chazaka. What's the chazaka? The status quo. How were things up till now? Right, let's give a piece of meat that you knew was usher till now. You're not sure if it somehow changed. Right? So you say, follow the cheska, or monetary cases like that. It's a better chazaka. That's easier to understand. Right? We're not sure if, Zach Katz sold me his big head basketball game or not. Right? So who gets to keep it if we have no proof whatsoever? He does. Why? Because the chazaka was, it was his. The burden of proof is upon me. Okay, now, what if I have a case where I've got a Sveik Sveika, and I also have a Chazaka? Can Sveik Sveika create a Heter against a Chazaka? There's a Cheskat Iser, but I've got a Sveik Sveika. So that's a great question. So I'm going to do it outside. In the second paragraph, he says, it might depend whether Sveik Sveika is Rove or not. Or maybe Sveik Sveika is even stronger than Rove. What if I discover Rove can't beat Chazaka, but Sveik Sveika can? Right, that'd be exciting. Okay, if I have a Rove against Chazaka, Rove doesn't win. But if I have a Sveik Sveika, Sveik Sveika wins. Now, again, this sounds really abstract. Life is about to get much less abstract, guys. Look at the last paragraph. And here, most of you, this is just for you. Okay? Ubederech ze shobal p'yachadosh matzano shohochu kol gdolei chikrelei v'anshei chayel migdolei asfardim achronim. The Sfardim guys, they're better at being makel than we Ashkenazim. What do the Sfardim say? B'tshuvateim, dematirin b'sveik sveika, afilu b'chezkat iser eshet ish. Ben b'nyinei aguna. That is a crucial heter. All of a sudden, this very theoretical abstract case just came to life. Right? You're trying to free a married woman. Right? We're not sure what happened to the husband. Right? So, from a chazaka perspective, unfortunately, what do you have there? Cheskat isur. What was the status quo? She's a married woman. What if I could raise two different sveikot that would then say that either one suffix is maybe the husband died, one suffix is maybe the original kiddushin wasn't a kiddushin, for the sake of argument. Right? What if I could raise such a sveik sveika? That's a classic sveik sveika against a cheskat isur. Says the Pnei Yoshua, apparently what was the tradition of Sephardi Psak? You can rely on sveik sveika to overcome even a cheskat isur of eshet ish. And maybe sveik sveika is stronger than Rove. So I think this is a great example. You could ask all kinds of theoretical questions. Sometimes they can really come to life in a very, very profound and important way. All right, everybody have a wonderful Shabbat.